Chicken Jonathan. Chicken Jonathan. Chicken Jonathan. Chicken Jonathan. Hey, everybody, welcome to Jake and Jonathan.
Oh!
You are us. By listening to this, you are us.
You are we.
We, you, we.
Jake, we've got some breaking news.
Breaking
and Jason,
news.
Jason, all right, Jason, I know you have to do this always in real time, but here's what we're thinking, right? We might have a few more of these updates that are about to come up, so it'd be great if you could put some music that's appropriate with the update in the background. I'm thinking some sort of like, well, you'll see. All right, Jake, you called me, and it was an emergency.
Yeah, emergency.
And you said, John, I have a Gandalf update.
News about Gandalf, which you don't often get, but we've got
Gandalf
news.
Gandalf
news.
So it's a new segment. You always wanted to have a segment, Jake. Here it is.
Finally, we have it. It's Gandalf news.
Gandalf news.
I have been reading The Hobbit out loud to my son, Flynn. And so I've got some now firsthand. I mean, I've read this book before,
yeah,
lots of times, actually. Since I was a kid, I was reading it over and over, and then I read it to my kids. Anyway, I once read it out loud. I read out loud to my wife, and I read The Hobbit out loud to her probably up to like page 250. And she, it turns out, had been falling asleep, but not telling me when she was falling asleep. And so she actually said, "What's a hobbit?"
Oh, no.
At 250 pages in.
What's
I was like, "You're kidding me. You're kidding me." And she just like kept thinking she was going to be able to like figure it out the next time.
Yeah.
You know, before she fell asleep.
What is a Lord of the Ring? Oh, my God. What is a hobbit? All right, cool. So first of all, I find it very wholesome and cute that you read out loud to your wife.
I do voices and everything.
So
yeah,
wholesome.
It's great.
So cute. I love that. So the opposite of me.
I've been reading about The Hobbit, and you know, in the context of what we've been talking about, Gandalf's powers, I was curious because I've always just kind of taken for granted that he had a lot of powers, and you brought that into question. You said you're not sure that he actually can do anything.
He has a stick with a light on it.
The point where I'm at now, Gandalf and the dwarves and Bilbo Baggins are all in trees, and the wolves are down below having a meeting. So people who are really familiar with the story will know what's going on.
The wolves are having a meeting?
Wolves are having a meeting. Yeah.
Okay, so this book is obviously silly.
It's 100% the most serious book ever written.
Fact.
Fact.
Okay, so the wolves are having a meeting. Cool.
Okay, up until this point so far, here's what I've seen Gandalf do. While they were in Bilbo's house, he blew smoke rings that went through other smoke rings.
Okay.
That might have been magic, or...
Or he's a smoker. He's a heavy smoker.
He turned on a light on the end of his stick. That's another thing he did.
I just spat onto my really nice LG Mac screen. Yeah, so he turned on the light at the end of a stick,
yeah,
which is the sort of the main thing I've seen him do so far. Why did they bring this old guy with them?
He like arranges the whole thing.
He's like, "Look, dudes, I'm a magician. Check this out." Just getting stoned.
Part of what he does is he like verbally berates them.
Yeah, okay.
Like anytime anybody questions anything he does, he's like, "Don't you know who I am? I'm Gandalf." And then they kind of go along with it.
Yeah.
Then another time, there are trolls, and the trolls have got all the dwarves in sacks. Okay, so they caught all the dwarves and Bilbo, and they put each one in a sack. And the trolls are talking about how they're going to eat them. What method should they use to cook the dwarves?
That would be frightening. If it happened in real life, you know?
In this one, Gandalf does an impression of the trolls, and he makes them argue with each other by just standing by the edge and kind of making an impression of their voices until the sun rises and they turn to stone. So far we've got smoke rings, light on a stick, and voice impression.
Yeah, so all of those things a crazy old man who's a stoner could easily do.
Okay, there's two more things that I've read so far.
Okay.
When the goblins, they go into a cave, the dwarves, and it's just one thing after another for them. They go into a cave to get out of a storm, and goblins, there's some spoilers in here, by the way, if you have not read The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
Goblins come into the cave and bring them down inside the mountain tunnels. But Gandalf, right before, he turns on a light on his stick, and some goblins die when he does that.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
The light goes on and some goblins are like, "Fuck that." and they just die.
Maybe it's an explosion. Could be that, the light actually goes up to the level of an explosion. You don't really know. Then he does another thing with a light on a stick inside the mountain. And again, more goblins die.
It sounds like real magic.
This sounds like it could be actual magic.
Yeah.
Then they get away. And then just where I am right now, where I've gotten to with my son, he's up in the tree and he lights a pine cone on fire, different colors of fire. And then he throws the pine cones at the wolves and the fire's really hard to put out. That's what we got so far.
Gandalf is a renegade.
It's definitely a different vibe in terms of magic than Harry Potter, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a bit more like...
random?
Yeah, a bit random. Like, you don't really know from time to time what he can do.
I don't know if he's going to blow a smoke ring or blow you up.
He definitely talks like a lot of trash.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the Gandalf is like his bluster. You're just like, whoa, it's Gandalf, guys. So back off.
What does your son think of Gandalf?
My son is kind of hard to read. Like, I know he likes the story a lot, but when I'm reading, he listens pretty quietly, and he usually doesn't get... Like, my older son was more... obviously, you could tell what he thought was awesome. And my older son did think that Gandalf and like Dumbledore were awesome. It's harder to tell. I should just ask him. I mean, he's not up here right now, yeah. But I'll ask him later, and we'll get a report. We'll do a Gandalf report next time.
The Gandalf report. I think it's over now?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got for now.
Is it over?
Yeah.
I really like that update, okay. Jake. Okay. I would appreciate if you keep them coming.
Okay, yeah. We're probably going to go right on through the Lord of the Rings, so that's the plan. So what you spat on your screen, and now I'm curious. You said something about the monitor being really nice. I've been thinking about getting monitor.
Oh, this is the best one. So it's the LG monitor that was made in conjunction. Apple and LG worked on it together.
Yeah.
You can buy it on apple.com. It's the LG UltraFine 4K or 8K monitor.
Is it the 24-inch or the 27-inch?
So I went for the 24-inch because I didn't want to have the 27-inch. It's just too large for me. And I don't need to do that much productivity work.
Jason, could you just cut down the entire podcast to "it's too large for me"? It's just a 5-second podcast.
Just that on repeat. That on repeat. It's too large for me. So I would say it's very good, but also the most frustrating shit on the planet. Because on the one hand, it's calibrated exactly like the MacBook Pro screen. The screen itself, quality-wise, is perfect. Zero problems. It's amazing. And I tried a lot of screens before this, and I was getting super frustrated. The bad thing about it, so it connects directly to the Mac with USB-C.
Okay.
And you can even control it using your keyboard as if it was an iMac. So it's like really uniquely integrated with Apple devices. One bad thing is that sometimes, and it's not fixable, by the way, Apple cannot solve this problem, even if you spend like an hour on the phone with them. So this is if you're using like a... would you want to use it for a laptop?
For a laptop, yeah.
Okay, so this is where the problem starts. You'll have it plugged into the laptop. You'll have your laptop closed in clamshell mode because you'll want to have your laptop like on the side and the monitor there, and it's kind of set up like an iMac. And then you wake it up using the keyboard or the mouse, all good. When it wakes up, 1 out of 5 times when it wakes up, it's zoomed in super, super, super massive as if the screen is like an 800 by 800 projector or something.
Yeah.
So sometimes you open it and all you see is like the place where you would enter your password taking up the entire screen, super blurry. And the only way to solve it is by opening the laptop, waiting for a second for it to realize, okay, now it's actually this resolution, closing it again, and then putting it back. So it's extremely frustrating because 1 out of 5 times when you wake it, you have to actually go and open the clamshell. But the amazing thing is, check this out. You just need one cable for everything. Everything goes through USB-C.
Oh, that's cool. John's holding up his laptop with just one cable going in.
And it charges. And the other cool thing is, you realize I have this microphone and everything attached. That's all attached to the screen, but it's as if it's attached to the laptop. So it works. It's really, really impressive as a product. And even though it's got massive problems, which Apple can't solve, it's the best one still.
It's still the best one. Okay.
But it's super expensive compared to all the other screens with the same specs, but it's Apple stuff.
I use an iMac most of the time. I use a 27-inch iMac. And I was just thinking about getting another setup up here. Yeah, so I'm kind of on the fence between, is it worth the expense of getting another iMac versus is the display connected to the laptop?
Yeah, the display is amazing. And you know... I have this setup at home and in the office. That problem happens on both.
Oh, weird.
And I've talked to other people who have the same thing, and it's a big problem you find online as well. Even with that, If you accept you're paying a massive premium for a broken object, yeah. then you're fine.
I can accept that.
Speaking of massive premium,
yeah,
I've been using Superhuman for 1 week now.
Should we do an update song? There should be update sound for that.
Superhuman update. Blah, 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 blah. Clicky, clicky, click. Superhuman is one of the best all-round products I've used in a very long time. All jokes aside about how many sticks I would give it, 5 sticks, 10 sticks, everything about it is executed so well that I'm shocked. And it's a great product with an unbelievably best onboarding time. And honestly, the fact that you have to pay for it from day one without a free trial adds a seriousness to it that nothing else has, and it's not very throwaway. It's just this thing that forces you to completely change your behavior in a way that makes your life better. And I think I was reading a quote from Stuart Butterfield today that a friend actually sent me, and it's like, unless you actually have to change someone's behavior, unless you can change someone's behavior, it's not really innovation. I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And then I thought about Superhuman. I opened Gmail back up and I was like, no, I can't do email like this anymore. Like, Superhuman is, in my opinion, just one of the best products I've used in a very long time from an execution point of view. It's amazing.
When you go back to Gmail, what's the pain for you?
Oh, you know what? It's actually like when you've been using an iPhone 10 for a year and then you meet someone who has like an iPhone, the small one, but a really old one, and it's really janky.
And you just laugh and you want to, but you want to cry for them.
I mean, someone who wants to have one of those smaller ones, but you're like, I'm not like, oh, you can't afford a new iPhone. Get away from me, peasant. Not like that.
Don't touch me. Don't touch me.
Don't touch me. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. The way I can describe it best is when I went from the normal iPhone to the new Retina display iPhones, and then you go back and look at the old non-Retina, non-HD screens. It feels like that when I open up Gmail. I'm like, oh my God, I can never go back to doing email like this. It's like, okay, so specifically what I think is not good and works better in Superhuman, I think the fact that everything is 100% optimized for keyboard shortcuts is amazing, first of all. So they have way more powerful keyboard shortcuts than Gmail does. I love the fact that you deal with your emails. You can kind of deal with them all in one go. So you like start on an email and then you just keep going through them one by one without ever having to go back to the inbox. So the inbox is like this starting point, but you never need to go back to it. And the split inboxes work a lot better than how Gmail treats filters, because you have them visible horizontal across the top of the UI and you can really easily tab through them. So they don't feel like things, at least for me right now, I don't feel like they're dumps where I'm just going to build stuff up like I did in Gmail. I feel like I'm actually going to use these ones. And if they become a dump, I'll rethink how I want to use that filter. Usually after the weekend, I get back into the office and I have so many emails and I hate it. And I sometimes just delete all just to get the chaos to go away. But today I was just like, it was fun. I was just like, press enter. Okay, E, E, E. Okay, I'll do this one later. Okay, hit R to reply. Okay, I'll just do that. Although some of my some of the keyboard shortcuts are not working for me.
Oh.
So I think maybe there's some other apps conflicting with it. For example, the remind me later shortcut doesn't work for me, even though I know what it is.
H?
No, the when I press H, sorry, the one that allows you to send the email later.
Oh, right.
Which is actually a handy thing for me working on multiple time zones.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
But this is like a complete rethink of email. You know, mailbox, it was like, oh, you could swipe, you can do this. And it's like, they're all basically the same shit.
Yeah.
This is different. This is like an OS of email.
I agree and I disagree. I agree that the when you say OS,
okay,
the whole thing about having sort of the spotlight on the Mac where you press command space and you get the little thing up and then you can like type. And
yeah,
it's such a nice way to navigate through things when the search works, which is rare on the Mac.
Yeah. The Mac search used to work back in the day. Now it is just does not work anymore.
But I love Spotlight, and I'll use that to like type in little math equations and all kinds of things as a calculator. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But they have some of that stuff in Superhuman. You have the sense of like, I can press Command K and get this little search field to pop up, and then I can type stuff in, and it's super smart. And a lot of the interpretation of English is like so great. Like you're like, oh, I want to snooze it and I can type Tuesday and it's like, oh yeah, you mean next Tuesday, or it's like 10 days.
It's
crazy. I can type 10 and it's like you probably mean 10 days, and if not, it gives you a bunch of different options you can like arrow through. It's really nice. The reason why I'm like, but I kind of disagree with you that it's a total like transformation of or rethink of email, is that it just feels like, like when I go back to Gmail, I don't have that huge, to me there's not this huge disconnect. It's like I go back and I'm like, oh yeah, it's the same thing. It's just like it has a bit less features. In some ways it's nicer, and this is partly the way that I use Gmail. It's because I use Priority Inbox. That's a part of it. But if you use Priority Inbox, the fact that Superhuman doesn't is a bit annoying, because the Priority Inbox filter is like, anytime I check email and I've been away for a while, Gmail does a good job of batching those into like things that probably don't matter so much, and then like stuff that's that does.
Right.
And having to do that manually and going through like that sweep of email annoys me. And like I've used keyboard shortcuts in Gmail for a long time, and so that's, it all just feels like, to me it just feels like Gmail, like the way it should be, the way it should have evolved,
right?
Or the way Gmail might, well, I don't think it ever will, well, they'll probably buy Superhuman, but if Gmail, like the way it should be in like 5 years, like it does feel like you're using something that's a huge massive leap forward. But to me it is, it does still feel of the same thing, because it still follows this chronological, it's your list of email that hasn't been changed. And that is the part where I really hope that they'll do something special. I installed over maybe the last few days, I tried out Consider, which is a competitor, and has a great marketing site, consider.co, if you're curious to see it. It's a just a fantastic marketing site. They talk about their principles. They talk about why email matters, why email is like doing better, but the problems with it. It's just like great writing, and it's a great visual design. I love their marketing.
Oh yeah, I've seen this website. Very cute. I'm just, wait, do they have the flat characters?
It looks like they would, but I feel like they don't. Actually, I'm going to actually open it up. I don't have it open.
Oh, I don't see them.
Here's the most annoying thing about Spotlight. I just did command space, and I'm like, CH. Now, what do you think I want to open if I type CH?
Chrome.
Probably Chrome. Guess what it opened?
Chrome.
Chess.
It opened chess.
Yeah. And now it's like sign into Game Center, and I can't get out of this like series of dialogues.
There's a flat character. If you go to consider.co and then hit the company tab, the exact bullshit cliche art style is right there on the top of the page. I knew it.
Okay, C. I search for C, Adobe Audition. CH, chess. CHR, oh, Google Chrome. Well, what did you think? What app do I use all the time? God, I'm going to switch to Safari, which will just help Apple, but just to, God. Okay, I'm going to start using Opera.
I can't use Consider because, see, Consider, to me, and I haven't used the product, this is the hipster techie email app visual style that I'm trying to, like, that just makes me think they're not deeply, deeply thinking about things. Like, the thing about Superhuman is it's almost stubbornly has no style. You know, it's just like, this is a tool.
It is legit engineer. It's a legit, like, engineering company.
Yeah, this is a tool. Use this tool. And then Consider is like, how about look at these pretty characters?
I actually think Superhuman is really well designed. Again, it's like everything that they do is like, that's what I feel like the heart of Google was. If we could have been good enough at being Google, when like we would have done that, but it's so good. You're right. They have the goofy people. Yeah. And then I started using it and it was amazing to me. And I don't want to like diss them, but I kind of have to, because they're competing with Superhuman. I'm sorry, you cannot help but compare. And you start using the product. You actually go and like, I'm going to sign up. And everything compares poorly to Superhuman. How much they seem to want you as a customer is worse. Because like if you get through, like you get a referral or whatever to Superhuman, and then they start to like email you, they'll keep emailing you. They're like good salespeople. Like they seem like they care. Whereas with Consider, it was just like one email and then they're like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
You finally get in, and the out-of-box experience is like, for Consider, is like this little short video that is just like, oh, here's a two-minute video of how Consider works and what's different. And they didn't even seem like to have their heart in making the video. And it was like all of the polish that you see on the marketing site instantly vanishes.
Yeah.
And then it's just like you get in there and then they're like, everything just is like, so you just feel like, no, care, like convince me to use this. Cause I felt like Superhuman worked so hard to be like, this is going to be better.
That's the thing. I think Superhuman is a rare, and we mentioned this last time, it's a rare case of almost like this auteur in the design space where you can tell this is the vision of someone who's extremely opinionated and doesn't care right now about this being a mass market product and cares actually about solving the problem in the best way possible, even if some of the design choices are limiting to how, or like break the patterns of how you usually work, including the fact that the onboarding is in person, and who knows how long that will last, but I guess they'll figure out that it increases the or decreases the churn rate. I just think that's superhuman for me. I use so many tech products. I use so many software as a service products. We pay for so many of them as well. This is the first one in a while where I feel it genuinely solved a problem, but also from a pure product design and product strategy perspective, I'm impressed that something like this is coming out of Silicon Valley that's not just about hyper growth and grabbing the market and doing the free trial and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like actually pretty stubborn. It's like a weird, almost old school approach to SaaS, right?
What do you think the lifetime value of a customer has to be to warrant having an in-person call at the beginning of every sign up?
It's really easy to calculate that. We do the same thing for Level Up. So we do a one-on-one 45 minute onboarding call for Level Up members. Level Up is just one of our programs. And we calculate it. It's just like, how much does it cost to have someone doing these calls per hour? And how long does someone stay if they've gone through this call? And it's a really easy calculation. It's like, okay, maybe this costs us about $100 to $200 every time. That's actually extreme. It's usually more like $50. And if the person stays for 3 months, then they'll already will already hit like break even. You know, my onboarding call was done by a remote worker. You're right. It was just someone in their apartment onboarding me. The cool thing here is it's super scalable. Like anyone can do those onboarding calls. It's going to be super easy for them to get people on freelance contracts or no contract or just hourly.
I don't know. Do you think anybody can?
I think most people can do this.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Totally most. They're not trying to sell you. They're just giving you a tutorial. And it's honestly, like, be realistic. Like, how long would it take to train you up to do that? Probably an hour or something?
Yeah, I guess if I have, like, a script to do it. And
yeah, you'd have a script and you'd have, like, a system and you'd have an automated system for when to send out the emails. It's very simple.
I guess the person's already sold. Like, the customer is already sold on doing the thing.
It's simple and very charming. And I think if they don't go crazy and, like, you know, it just depends. Are they going to go for the blitz scaling approach where it's just about the most customers possible and it's about winning and it's about there's only one way and it's to win? Or are they going to go the base camp route where it's like, you know, it's fine not to be the dominant project management software. You can have an amazing business by just having a very good product for a niche market. And I'd love to see Superhuman go that way, but, you know, with the Silicon Valley,
it's hard because they've raised a lot of money too.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a challenge for them.
And if they raised a lot of money, then their investors are either going to want massive profits, which is not a Silicon Valley thing, or an IPO, which means we're probably using Superhuman at its best form right now.
Oh, man. I know. It's going to be sad. I would be sad if they get acquired because...
Oh, I'll be genuinely very sad if they get acquired.
There's no big company who could acquire them who executes like they do.
No.
And their opinion will be lost.
And come on. Also, if let's just say this was your email app and Microsoft comes along and acquires it for, I don't know, $10 billion. You're going to make the choice like either, you know, that doesn't matter to me, or hell yes, that was the whole point of it. I won. Yeah. And who gives a shit about the opinionated stuff? I can do another opinionated product later. I wouldn't judge Rahul either way.
Certainly not. It just will be sad, but it would be certainly understandable. In these first few like days of trying to use Consider, it's interesting how hard it is to change your flow, especially with email, because we rely on it so much and we have so much muscle memory. And they have a whole different way that they want me to do it. And without that push of like the person like having to go through that really. And I was like, I put off doing the call with Superhuman for a long
time. Me too.
I was like, oh God, like an hour to go. Ugh. I just think it's so interesting because so often when if you're trying to sell something or you're trying to design a product, you're thinking about how to make it as easy for the customer as possible. And they actually like were like, that is not what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
We're actually trying to get you to like a hard place to get to. It'll be better once you get there, but it is going to be hard to get there. And we're going to work hard, but you're going to work hard, customer, too. And that's the only way in. And there's no, you can't just dip your toe in and do it. You have to go through this barrier. And man, it's that part is still super fascinating to me. I still don't know though if I'm going to stick with it, because to me Gmail is, with Simplify, is like competitively good, but I admire what they've done.
Not for me. I think I'm stuck to Superhuman now. Another product that I've been using recently that has a similar stubborn approach, where the company requires a massive amount from you before you're even allowed to pay for it, is this EO network I'm in. So in the first place, it's for, like, similar to Superhuman, you either get a referral or you're on quite a long waiting list. They kind of, you know, check your background and, you know, make sure that you're the right type of person to get in. You have to be trained to be part of it as well. So you have to take out, you know, hours out of your days to train to even start being part of this thing, to learn how to communicate properly within this organization, all of this kind of stuff. And then every month you have to give about 5 to 6 hours of your time, if not more, to just stay part of it. And it's just something that you have to do. And you can skip 2 months per year. Like, you can skip 2 meetings per year. And if you skip more than that, you get kicked out.
Wow.
And then it would be one of those things where it wouldn't be that easy to get back in once you've been kicked out. First of all, I have to say, EO as a product itself is so far really excellent. And I don't know how it works, because it's such a massive organization and it's a lot of volunteers running it as well. And it's like a not-for-profit organization. I have no idea how it runs so smoothly, but it does. But the fact that it requires a lot from me and a lot of serious, like, attention from me has made me appreciate it a lot more than any other sort of entrepreneurial help things that I've tried. And that the fact that there are mandatory things that I have to do if I actually want to be part of it. And so for me, I think that, like, I got the same vibe when I was getting onboarded to Superhuman. I was like, this is, like, so stubborn and so weird. And, like, you know, I am having to put in the work, even though the customer is always right and they want my money. So I have to do, like, why do I have to do anything?
Yeah.
This EO thing has a very similar vibe in terms of the ask you're being given before you're even allowed to pay.
There's such a big trend and push across all tech products for so long to make things as easy as possible to get into.
Frictionless.
Yeah. And it's part of why we get into these problems with all of the negative sides of social media, all the negative sides of phones and things, is because everything is just too easy.
Right.
And is drawn to, like, you know, what's the least amount of thinking or effort I have to do? And then knowing that I'll get a little dopamine hit from something with a very tiny amount of effort, well, you know, I'm going to waste a lot of time and get sucked into that pretty easily, and bad things happen. And I don't know, maybe this is the dawning of a new era. Although I have the sense that this idea of making people do work to get in is, like, really old. I'm sure that there's a name for this. But
it is. EO is very old as well.
Yeah.
I think it's actually more of an old school thing.
And there's the IKEA, like, I don't know what this is called, like the IKEA effect or something, but people value furniture more
when
they've had to build it. Yeah. And so there's probably some of that is going on here too. But anyway.
It's an interesting topic. If you're listening, which I hope you are, if you're hearing my voice, you are listening, do let us know. Do let us know what you think.
If you hear John's voice and you're not listening, tell us about how's that work.
Yeah, how's that work? Also, I just realized I need to make a new email address that has Jake and Jonathan. But for now, it's
PBC.
PBC@ajsmart.com if you have anything you want us to read out, if you have any thoughts.
Okay, you have a company. You have a team of people.
That is true.
It's Superhuman, which is expensive, $30 a month. Do you think it's worth it at a company level? Would you pay for your team to be using Superhuman yet?
Yes. So I just demoed it to some of the leadership team at AJ and Smart just before this podcast. And I said, if anyone wants this, I'll pay for it. So for me, as a company owner, if you're doing it the right way, if you see something that can improve people's work life and reduce the busy work and let them do more of the actual valuable stuff, you'll pay $30 per month for that.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. But I mean, not a lot of people at AJ and Smart actually need to use email. So, I mean, most of the designers don't do much email work.
Yeah.
It's just the management.
Well, with that, I think I said everything I can say about Superhuman for today.
I want to recommend a book. I want to recommend a little baby book.
Do it.
It's called Over Deliver by Brian Kurtz. Here's the book in my hand. So I haven't started reading it yet, but I...
Classic.
Yeah. I'm giving a pre-recommendation based on recommendations I've been given. The kind of tagline is, build a business for a lifetime of playing the long game, indirect response marketing. Okay, the direct response marketing part is not the part I'm reading this for, but for me, one of the things that I think makes a lot of companies stand apart from others is this ability to think in customer lifetime value and extrapolate that out over multiple years and make decisions based on customer lifetime value. And even though it's such a basic thing, it's also one of these things that holds a lot of companies back. It holds them back from making decisions that could make them last for 5 years instead of two. A good example of that is, for example, doing like a free event for a client, which we sometimes do, where you go and do like a free workshop for them. A lot of people will be like, I would never do that. You know, that's, you know, so devaluing my work and et cetera, et cetera. But if you build your sales funnel correctly, then doing that free workshop might equate to 4 years worth of work that adds up to 400K. And being able to think on those longer timescales and link up these upsells is a good way to build a business. So that's why I'm recommending that one.
Well, it reminds me of a book that you and I actually read, which is, Bird Box. Lost and Founder by Rand Fishkin and his whole thing about when they were doing growth hacking and what they found that killed their long-term value for customers. But really, it was the writing content, bringing people in really slow, making sure people knew what they were all about.
You need a balance.
I don't know if what I think about this, you recommending books before you've read them.
Yeah, it's fine. I think you need a balance between short-term. Like, so for example, our short-term game is Facebook ads. So we spend a lot of money on that. But our long-term game has been going on for 2 years of just making videos on YouTube every single week without a break. And even things like the podcast, where theoretically people are like, could think, wow, this is such a waste of time for Jake and Jonathan.
People might be right.
And it is. No, I'm joking. Yeah. Well, it might be, but that's the thing. You hedge your bets having multiple long-term and short-term things in play. And I think sometimes people, especially like Instagram entrepreneurs, it's very much about the sell now, like make money immediately and just don't give anything away for free, be hyper aggressive. I really do not agree with that. And I think a lot of people kind of fall down a hole of super short-term money things. I'm bad at explaining it, but customer lifetime value is like the entire strategy of AJ and Smart is doing things that increase the customer lifetime value as much as possible.
One thing that's nice about that strategy, because I was thinking when you said like, that's the whole strategy of AJ and Smart, and something kind of like rubbed me wrong about it. When I didn't mean like I was mad at you, but like, I was like, it doesn't sound quite right.
Headbutt me.
And I think that why it doesn't sound quite right is that you seem to do what you do because you like it. And like, because like, it's fun to be nice. And like, it's nice to be, it feels good to be generous and to be helpful to people. And like, that's those principles of like helpfulness, generosity, friendliness, they go along with, I think, with building long-term customer value in a way that can feel really like a good human way to operate, where you're not trying to like sort of scheme and dissect the value of the people you're talking to all the time. I mean, even if that is what's going on, like it actually nicely aligns with good human like being ways.
A good example of that is you can't always guarantee that you hire altruistic people. But if they know that customer lifetime value is the absolute target, then they'll know that if someone asks for a refund after the refund date, we'll still give it to them because we want to make sure that this customer could potentially in the future have enough money or feel better about AJ and Smart. Yeah. And for us, it's obviously we just want to have amazing customer service, but measuring it with customer lifetime value in mind makes it easier for new employees to come in and kind of understand it also from a cold point of view.
Okay. Well, on that note, I need to go walk Flynn to school and we'll probably talk about Gandalf. We probably won't.
All right, Jake. It was beautiful.
It was a great one.
A juicer. Let's sing it out.
Let's sing it out. Okay.
Jake and Jonathan. Wait, one thing. I just want to say, all right, people wonder why we're singing out of tune and out of time. We're not playing the music at the same time. It's just put in later. So that's why.
Jake and Jonathan. Have a good day, everybody, and a good week. We'll be back with episode 99 more soon than you can believe. Jake and Jonathan, see you later.
I'm waving.
Bye! Bye, everybody.